A1 Custom Car Care.
All right, good morning and welcome. You've got Sarah and Dustin, A1 Custom Car Care. Going to have a little car care discussion today. Sarah, I got a question for you.
And I've got an answer.
So I parade around in all these ASE, like...
I think you bought them off eBay.
You know, they have. And I've wanted one forever. I need to just bite the bullet and order it. They have a YouTube-certified ASE patch.
Yeah.
It's just for clowning and fun. But, you know, I thought it'd be cool to wear that one once in a while.
You should get it.
I need to order it. I've had it in my cart like 20 times. I'm like, oh, that's just, it's just a gimmick. But, you know, you got to have something to laugh about. When you see all this stuff... What does that mean to you? Is it just propaganda?
I mean, it looks like you mean a little bit of business.
Yeah. Do you know what ASE stands for? Automotive is the first one. I'll help you with that one.
Service.
Yep. Excellence.
Oh, okay. Well, I got one out of three there.
So why does this matter? Does that matter to you? Like if you saw somebody with all the, you know, the patches and the, I guess, credit or what would it be? You know, all the certifications on the walls, we have them at the shop and says, hey, he can do steering and suspension and electrical and AC. Does that mean anything? Like, do you think that, like, I realize you're kind of part of, you know, you are one of us. Does that matter to you? Like, do you think you need to be certified in order to work on a car?
Yes, but I think that that goes to show that you have went through the excessive training and that you've actually taken the time. You're not somebody that's just,
hold my beer and I'll work on your car.
Yeah, you weren't just somebody that they found off the street.
Yeah. And I guess I take it for granted. I grew up in a household where my dad was ASE certified most of my life. And, you know, that was always like a big deal to me when I was a kid. So when it came my turn, I wanted to, you know, make sure I was certified across the board. And I hold actually the automotive master certification for, you know, passenger cars. I also hold the master certification for medium and heavy duty trucks. So that's roughly somewhere around 20 different certifications. And then I have varying others. I think I have close to like 28 or 29 different certifications that tell me areas of the vehicle that I'm certified to work on.
How many hours do you have to put in
per
certification?
It is a bunch. So the way it works is you actually go over to a testing center. You have to recertify every 5 years. So even if I was certified, I have to recertify again because automobiles change, obviously.
Right.
It's really, you have to have a minimum of 2 years on the job work experience before you can even test and pass. I think they will allow you to test before that, but they won't give you the certification until you have logged job experience. And then, you know, the testing is anywhere from probably an hour to 2 hours per certification during the testing procedure. So there's a couple of times where I've been kind of a goofball and I'm like, you know, I'll take 7 tests all at once, or I'll take 9 all at once, or I think 12 is the most I've ever done, which several of those were recerts, which are condensed tests. But it's like a whole day inside the training center or the testing center. They wand you when you go in to make sure you have nothing with you. So you got to take your belt off. They check your pockets. They're stringent that you are not cheating while you're doing this.
That's good.
They take it for sure serious. And in the beginning, I think I was one of the youngest ones within our company to get my master certification and probably one of the younger ones in the industry. But that's been 20 years ago now. So I've recerted many, many times in between now and then. As well as when you go in, I think, Sarah, you've done some photos and some videography for us. Each one of our techs and their certifications with a photo and a bio are on the wall of all of our facilities. And it's really cool. I was kind of poking fun at the guys a little bit, as well as myself. A lot of those photos, when they were taken, we were all a lot younger. And so it's like this time capsule, if you will. And you can see, because we have such good retention, that, you know, these folks have been with us a long, long time and life takes its toll. And so it's kind of immortalized, I guess, there on the walls of each shop. So it's just, it was something that came up and I was thinking, I'm like, well, I need to ask Sarah if she thinks that it's even, if it matters. Because, you know, not every doctors created equal. Not every attorney or lawyer, not every, you know, mechanic for sure is created equal. And I want them to know who's working on their car. I feel it's important.
I like your little time capsules on the wall, if you will. I was reading about, I think it was Harlan the other day, actually, when I was in there.
Yeah, he's been with us not as long as some of our folks, but he's been in the industry for, I think, close to 40 years at this point. So he's got a countdown to the time where his time is up and he's going to hang up his wrenches. So it always, you know, I hate obviously losing somebody that's been with us and is extremely good at what they do. But I really am thankful for the wealth of experience and, you know, that people work their whole lives and actually get to retire.
Yeah.
You know, we have folks that, you know, I had worked with the majority of my career, but they had been there significantly longer than I had previously. And so it's nice that they still stop by and they ride their motorcycle and they tell me their fishing stories and, you know, just kind of keep up with what's going on. But now they're enjoying the fruits of their labor, essentially, that, you know, they paid into the system for all these years. You and I probably won't have any kind of retirement through the government, you know, I assume anyway. But I'm really glad and thankful, you know, not that there's not harder jobs out there. I'm not saying being a mechanic's the worst thing in the world, but it takes its toll. And, you know, it's really awesome to see somebody get to the point where they can pull back and, you know, grow a garden and, you know, just make that their obsession or, you know, whatever the case may be, because I want to be there at some point. You know, I want to be the guy that goes to the coffee shop and sits there for 2 hours and, you know, drinks a cup of coffee and, you know, makes small talk and whatnot and then goes on about their day. So I think the certifications are important. And the other reason that I'm so passionate about them is that they're elective. We are not mandated and nor do I want the red tape. We choose to invest in our people, make sure and hold them to a standard and foot the bill on their continued education. There we go. All the words. The best words. But it was just something that, you know, I don't think a lot of people think about. They think all mechanics are the same and, you know, we can go somewhere and get it done cheaper, etc. But maybe you can and maybe you can't and maybe it'll cost you dearly. So I really enjoy and really that's the reason that I chose to come to work for A1 Custom Car Care, as well as I made a mistake years ago when I quit and I left them and did not burn a bridge, thankfully. And so that really, their commitment to training, at least for me, started right there. And eventually it got to the point where I was so passionate about it that that was kind of my first step into kind of a management leadership role, was to take over some of the training and ongoing education for our technicians. So we just sent a technician, Charles, which is an awesome dude, to 3 days up in Kansas City for a Cummins diesel class. So that is really what it's about. And that's what I think separates A1 Custom as well as the other elite shops out there, because there are some good elite facilities, is that we continue to get better and we continue to grow our skill set, our equipment, and whatnot. So it's one of those things that, you know, if you are not keeping up with what's going on in the industry, you're going to go out of business. And I got a lot of years left in me. I don't want to be that person.
Well, we've got about a minute left. Okay. So I'm going to kind of talk about what we're going to talk about the next couple of segments. Now, you did a poll before you left about the top item that has really been, I guess, plaguing the shops over the last couple of weeks. I also have a couple of recalls, including Ford and their F-150 trucks. Over 800,000 plus are being recalled. So if you have a Ford, you might want to listen up to that and Nissan Leafs as well. And then also, I think we're going to talk a little bit about gas prices because I don't know about you, but I have noticed them kind of shooting up over the last couple of weeks.
A little bit. It's been drastic hikes.
Yeah.
So I don't think we've seen the end of it, huh?
We'll definitely see. I got a story from AAA where they're talking about the upcoming gas prices.
Goodness.
So that's a little bit of our show today. Mm-hmm. So we got to take a break.
Yep. We'll step into a break. Sarah and I will be right back after this. Your complete car care solution.
A1 Custom Car Care.
All right, welcome back. You've got Sarah and Dustin, A1 Custom Car Care. Going to have a little current events. Would this be the current events section?
It would. So let's start off talking about the poll that you did at the shop mm-hmm. on the most common repair for the last couple of weeks.
So I literally have run into this every week, sometimes daily, with people overheating their cars and not pulling over. And I get that. I want you to get to a safe spot. I want you to not, you know, just stop in the middle of the road or if there's no shoulder. But you got to keep an eye on this because what happens is they, in this, the instance that I'm thinking of was a Dodge vehicle. I think it was a Dodge Journey, the last one that I had run into, is that they drove it too far. And, you know, we're talking vehicles with 100, 200,000 miles on them. They overheated them and continued to drive, and that absolutely catastrophically destroys the engine. So I've given this discussion a few different times, but these later model engines, they're doing so much more. You look at the horsepower ratings on a V8 in the 80s or 90s, they were, you know, in their time, they were good. But you're getting more horsepower and torque out of 4- and 6-cylinder engines than you did in large displacement V8s, you know, not that long ago. And so when I, you know, see a vehicle like that, that runs like, I mean, they run good. They're good performers. The fuel economy is pretty good. Drivability, dependability is good. But what they will not tolerate, the trade-off is they're not as robust as some of those older cast iron blocks, cast iron cylinder heads. Now, could you hurt those older vehicles overheating them? Absolutely. Have I done head gaskets over the years and redid heads and et cetera? Yes. I've done droves of them just like most other mechanics out there. Absolutely. What I am seeing a difference in now is folks either don't know, they're not noticing it, or they do notice it and they think it'll be okay. And they continue to drive the vehicle in an extreme overheat condition. And it is costing a tremendous amount of vehicles to be pushed off the road. Because once you do that on an older vehicle, even the used engine prices, and we do not do a lot of used engine installations, nor is it a lot of times cost effective to tear down an engine and overhaul portions of it, rather than just order a crate engine and put in there. Now, some of you out there are probably like, what is he even talking about here? It's got to be cheaper to fix it. Well, now that we have overhead cam, overhead long driven timing chains, and we have multiple valves per cylinder, when you have a engine that you need to do cylinder head work or timing chain work or internal work, there are so many more internally driven parts that need to be repaired and serviced if and when you crack that engine open that it's just not cost effective to do a lot of repairs like I did 20 years ago. So let me get a little in the weeds on that if it's all right. Before, you had one camshaft, a very short timing set, chain, gears, etc., and then it ran up to push rods that were reusable, rocker arms that were reusable, that were pretty robust as far as being able to take some abuse. Now, fast forward to what we're working on now. So all of that has gone to overhead cam, multiple cams, multiple valves per cylinder. And when we have a catastrophic issue, now I have, you know, let's say in a cylinder head, I'll have, you know, 4 valves per cylinder or 3 valves per cylinder. I'll have usually 2 camshafts per cylinder head. I'll have cam followers by the same amount of valves that I have per cylinder. So I could have 24 valves in a cylinder or whatever the case may be, depending on what we're working on. I'm keeping this a little generalized, if you will. But when it comes to repairing those, let's say that it was a low miles engine, and that's another discussion, and I'll try not to soapbox it up too bad here, that if and when I do decide that this is a good candidate, and again, I make those decisions not off of anything other than what the condition of the vehicle is. So, for instance, if it's got 200 plus thousand miles and you need a head gasket, it is not in your best interest or mine to do a head gasket job on that. And I can give examples if anybody wants it, because I've seen other people do it. And I've done it to where you get the upper end all in good shape and ready to go. You spend $3,000 to $5,000 to $8,000 doing that, depending on the year, make, and model of the vehicle. And then something very quickly happens in the lower end, and all that money that was just spent on there is pretty much for naught. So I'm not interested in being a mechanic that throws good money after bad. You want your car fixed? That's what I'm interested in. I do not want to, you know, oh, we'll spend a few grand and then it end up being ugly. I've done it too long and I've done it wrong a few times. And when I say wrong, that was the cost of barrier of entry for me to learn those lessons, that I'm very strict on what it is and how it is I do these. But I digress. I'll back off on that a little bit. It just doesn't make any sense after we have to assemble. I'm not putting used cam followers back in, or if I have any kind of issue with the timing, I'm not putting used timing chains back in there. That is something that, you know, maybe if you wanted to try under your shade tree, that's up to you. But that is not a long-term, three-year, 36,000-mile quality repair as far as A1 Custom Car Care is concerned. If and when you spend your hard-earned money with whoever it is, but especially if it's us, I want to give you good peace of mind that if we do what it is we do and why we do it, that for many years and many thousands of miles down the road, you're in good, dependable shape, and it's as good, if not better, than before it broke. That is what I get up out of bed every day and show up at the shops to do. And we've had great success doing it that way. Have I bent my own rules from time to time? And every single time I do it, it bites me square in the backside. Yeah, I've made those mistakes. I've paid dearly for them at different points in my career. So now I've earned those stripes, if you will. And we made it right. We didn't bow out. We didn't just ship it down the road. We stepped up to, we bellied up to the bar and made sure that we got things taken care of and moved on. But going forward, we learned from that lesson, and I no longer try to make those same mistakes. So, you know, if that's something that folks can avoid, now that we've gone way out on the limb there, by not overheating their engine or pulling it over, or just, God forbid, doing a fluids check once in a while, you know, that's one of the things I think that gets overlooked a lot, especially when you go and you have somebody that hurries through your maintenance process and doesn't do a good job checking the vitals of the vehicles, kind of how we refer to it at A1 Custom, that, you know, a lot of times if you're checking your fluids on a regular basis, oil and coolant, along with all the rest of the fluids, you will catch those overheats actually before they happen. You will see that, hey, you know, I got to add a half a gallon of coolant every 3 to 4 weeks. Where's that coolant going? Those are all signs that, you know, people think, oh, it, you know, I just had my oil change 5,000 miles ago. It's okay. Popping the hood, just doing a good visual inspection is amazing. Absolutely amazing what the difference will be and how, you know, longevity of those vehicles will be in good shape. You know, I've always talked, you know, what actually makes a vehicle a good vehicle? And really, in my very simplistic stance, is people judge what a good vehicle or a bad vehicle is with how much they can neglect it and that it keeps running. And I'll give you a couple of examples both ways. And I pick on Dodge a lot, but when they do something good, I want to point it out. So you look at the old first gen, second gen, third gen Cummins that they put in their, you know, 3/4 ton and 1 ton pickups. Those engines, a lot of them were mechanically driven injection systems. You just about, and I'm not going to say people can't kill them because people do some amazing things out there, but you just about can just barely even open the hood on it from time to time. And I've had a drove of them in the shop, and it amazes me that, you know, the owners will neglect them as much as they do. And not all Dodge owners, so I don't want some hate mail out there. But that's what makes Dodge, that put Dodge on the map, honestly. Lee Iacocca, I think, was a big driver of that back in the day. those engines are just absolute tanks. I mean, they are amazing what they'll do. Now, fast forward now, and we've gone through several generations of the Cummins, they're not as robust as they once were. You look at the common rail ejection, you look at the CP4 pumps, and this is all the manufacturers out there. They will not tolerate dirty fuel. They will not tolerate not changing your filters. They will not tolerate the neglect that they once did without having a catastrophic come apart. And so people that have owned those Dodges forever and ever and ever, I've had them tell me, oh, well, my old truck, that never happened to it. And I did that all the time. Well, it's not the same as your old truck now. You know, your old truck made, you know, 600 foot-pounds of torque. Some of these new Dodges are, well, Dodge, Ford, and Chevy, they're either bordering or exceeding 1,000 foot-pounds of torque. Now, for somebody that doesn't tow much, that's probably like, oh, what in the world does that matter? Well, there's a trade-off. For that additional horsepower and torque, you had better maintain the vehicle in a much higher standard. This is no different than any race application that I've ever dealt with over, you know, the last couple of decades of my career. You know, when you start to crank up the horsepower, I'll pick on Ford for a minute. You know, you look at those 6-liter Fords, the Power Stroke that got such a bad reputation. Partially it earned it, by the way. If you left them in stock form, they would tolerate and not really have head gasket problems. But the moment you started cranking up the power or cranking up the, you know, the demand or the load on that engine, they started having head gasket problems and they flat came apart and they got a really bad reputation. And then they tried to fix it with the 6.4, which is an absolute abysmal disaster. And that broke the relationship between Navistar and Ford. And then Ford went out on their own and developed the 6.7, you know, Scorpion engine. But we're down at the bottom of the hour. You're listening to Springfield's Talk 104.1. We'll be right back after the break.
Your complete car care solution. A1 Custom Car Care.
All right, welcome back. We're about halfway through the show. You got Sarah and Dustin, A1 Custom Car Care. Sarah, you got some info over there?
I do. I actually have a really long text message from Corey in Battlefield. So first off, he brought up, a couple weeks ago, we were talking about CB handle ideas.
Oh,
we're still getting those
awesome.
In every couple of weeks.
I appreciate that.
I don't know if Corey's listening live or he's playing catch up with our podcast. Speaking of which, we don't mention our podcast
as much as we should.
So we do have a podcast. It's Car Care Show. You can find it on KSGF.com. Click on the little podcast section. That'll be located on the right. And then you can listen to past episodes from like years ago. Because we've been doing this a long time.
I know. Time flies.
At least.
I thought they'd boot me off after the first, like, 30 minutes.
I guess I'll let you on still. But, I mean, over 7 years.
That's awesome.
Because that's how long I've been here.
Thank you all out there for listening, by the way. And meeting all of you at the shops, at the gas stations. You know, it's I wear my uniform everywhere. Even on the weekends when I'm not working, a lot of times I'm I got to have my pen and my screwdriver, and it's just like my utility belt. It's like I'm Batman. No, I'm just kidding. But I do got to have all my gadgets.
So, Corey,
The
CB handles. So he's got two of them for
you.
One, which, by the way, did you find one yet?
You know, everybody likes something different. A lot of people liked Rusty Dusty, by the way.
Oh, well, good.
The Mr. Wrench, Mr. Good Wrench. I've had several of those. But I haven't it just hasn't quite felt like the one yet.
Okay, so maybe this will be one.
Okay.
So he's got Boneyard as a reference to all of your broken down vehicles in the field.
Oh, Stacy is going to run with that one.
The second is backup, since Dustin is such a believer in always having a backup plan.
Corey, you and I, that's awesome.
Yeah, you know what? I kind of like that backup.
I like that one.
Plus, I would be a good, just, it sounds good as a CB handle. Okay, so this is what he says, which is the longer portion of this text. I also want to give Dustin an outside of his box view. He's always spoken throughout his Saturday shows all about how customers are always somewhat hesitant or don't understand why they are paying for diagnostics. I get the impression sometimes that Dustin doesn't always understand why. Now, I believe that most people see automotive tests kind of like how they see medical doctors run up the bill by running a slew of tests.
After
all, The doctor isn't paying for them. When people barely have money for just the fixing of their vehicles, they don't see, quote, a value for their money, end quote, in testing and diagnostics. While the mechanics see the value and need the customer may not. You, as the professional, are, quote, supposed to just know what's wrong with the vehicle.
Yes.
It's kind of like free shipping. We have, as a customer base, gotten used to free estimates on car repairs. Anyways, just wanted to offer a different side or point of view on the specific topic.
Man, that's very wise. Corey, you're a very wise man. And I appreciate that. I hadn't really thought about that.
Yeah.
Definitely giving me a lot to think about. And I totally get where he's coming from now that he pointed that out. And I guess from my side of it, the thing that I see that just grinds my gears, pun intended, is that, you know, the cost of the parts is they're not giving those things away anymore. And I see people throw, or even those big box parts stores that I pick on quite a bit, you know, they throw all these parts. And a lot of times the aftermarket part is inferior to the, you know, the OE or original equipment part that was on there. And so I see folks just waste a ton of money hanging parts, or, you know, the old parts cannon. Mm-hmm. Have I talked about that in the past? And so they just throw all these parts at it, and then, you know, they've wasted all that money. And then when they bring it in and they're frustrated, and I totally get that, by the way, they're like, oh, you know, what's wrong with this doggone thing, blah, blah, blah. And they've spent all their money, hard-earned money, to Corey's point. And there, you know, ends up being a conflict or a friction point of why we want to charge for testing time, but it's to prevent good parts from being replaced, if you will. I won't even say misdiagnosed, but replaced that it didn't need, and to save that money. And so from my side of it, he's absolutely right. The doctor is not paying for the testing. Typically the insurance company or the consumer's paying for it. I totally get that. But on my side of it, I take a lot of pride in fixing the broken problem. You know, the part, you know, whether it's a wiring issue or if it is a bad part, as well as trying to make sure that I play detective on the backside of it. And if there's something that caused that part to fail, I sure as heck better fix that while I'm in there, because I do not want to put, say, a water pump on your vehicle that had failed for whatever reason and have a premature failure going down the road. In my point of view, it should last as long, if not longer, than the factory part from when you got it from whoever the manufacturer is. So if it makes it 120,000 miles, my goal, my warranty is 336. So the next 3 years, 36,000, that's mine. I'm going to take care of it. But going beyond that, I want it to last at least 120,000. And if poor maintenance is what caused the last one to go out, or whatever the case may be, I want to rectify that situation as well as fix what's broken. So, Corey, well done. And thank you for, you know, being a part of the show, honestly. That was awesome.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense?
Yeah. No, I agree.
And I'm going to give a lot of thought to those CB handles. If anybody else has got any more ideas on the CB handles, please send them in. This is fun. I enjoy it.
We're talking about this 3 weeks later.
That's right. Would you ever put a CB in your rig or Ryan's, you think?
I could see Ryan doing it.
Yeah.
But I don't know about mine. My car is so little, I don't think that I could actually find a yeah. place to put it.
That is a little bit of a challenge. I will tell you, though, I do a lot of driving, obviously. We've got some shops we work at down in Arkansas, as well as, you know, we travel, you know, for our little one quite often. I bet it's more than 10 to 15 times that I've just had the radio going, or I've come up on slow traffic, that I've been able to fire the radio up and see, or, you know, figuratively see, hear what's going on and make a game plan on, you know, problems that I'm potentially going to come up on in the truck, especially out on the interstate, by the way. Lots of good traffic, lots of good drivers. They have been amazing. As well as when I'm towing with the camper to make sure that I'm in the right lane. If we've got construction or, you know, stalled cars, whatever the case may be, it just keeps my surroundings and keeps me informed with what's going on. The value to that is immense, in my opinion, to be able to do that and just listen. Now, the other side of it, we were coming back from St. Louis. It's been a few months ago, and they were doing some construction somewhere in the Fort Leonard Wood area. I think it was on the east side of Fort Leonard Wood. And there was a big hill, and they shrunk it down to one lane at the bottom of the hill. But because of the curves and the hills, it just wasn't very apparent.
Ooh, I remember when they were doing this.
They've got it opened up now.
That's good.
Yeah. And we were coming back. We had taken, I think, Seth up to Rolla, if I remember right, to get him put into college. And when we were coming back, I got on the radio early because I could see the drivers as you're coming down a good grade and you're loaded. And so I got on there, brake check, eastbound. And I could see it make a difference because at the bottom of the hill, partially before I had radioed out there, I could see a truck just burning the brakes off of this thing, trying to stop in front of this small SUV that wasn't paying attention and wasn't zippering over. You know, they got the zipper part of it, wasn't getting over. And that truck was doing everything it could not to run into the back of that little bitty SUV. And the driver was doing all he could. I'm not, you know, I'm very thankful for the skill of that driver, but I, you know, radioed to a tremendous amount of line of drivers that were just at the top of the hill. And, you know, some of the drivers radioed back that, hey, man, they really appreciated that because it stacked up big time and hopefully, you know, help somebody out. They've done it to me, so I wanted to play my part. But we got one more break. You're listening to Springfield's Talk 104.1. We'll be right back after this.
Your complete car care solution. A1 Custom Car Care.
All right. Welcome back. You've got Sarah and Dustin, A1 Custom Car Care. We got just a little bit of time left.
That's right.
What do you got over there, Sarah?
Ooh, okay. So what do you want to talk about first? You want to talk about gas prices?
I do want to talk about gas prices.
Okay. So AAA increases at the pump slow and more relief could be on the way.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So this is, and hopefully this isn't too outdated. I pulled this a couple days ago.
Okay.
I haven't checked since to see if they have a new press release. So I do apologize if it if it's a couple days late, but okay, so this is what it says. The national average for a gallon of gas has continued its summer U-turn, but price increases have slowed and more relief could be on the way. The national average increased by 11 cents since last week to 382, which I don't understand how this could be slowing, but that's what it says. So pump prices have primarily risen due to the price of oil, which was near $80 per barrel last week, but has since softened recently. Last month's extreme heat played a role in the recent spike in gas prices due to some refineries pulling back, but now operations are getting back to normal, says Andrew Gross, who is the AAA spokesperson. Coupled with tepid demand, according to new data from the Energy Information Administration, gas demand decreased slightly from 8.9 to 8.84 million BD last week. Meanwhile, total domestic gasoline stocks increased by 1.5 million BBL to 219.1 million BBL. Lower gas demands in mid increasingly supply. That didn't make any sense. Lower gas demand amid increasing supply. There we go. Well, you know what this radio show has really taught me? That I don't know how to read English. That's what it's taught me. Okay, so lower gas demand amid increasing supply will likely help to slow price increases in the days ahead. Now, today's national average is $3.82. It's 29 cents more than a month ago and 34 cents less than a year ago. So these are the quick stats. Florida went up 19 cents.
Oof.
Missouri was the second most. 18 cents.
Yeah, I see it.
North Dakota, Oklahoma, South Dakota, 17 cents. New Mexico, 16 cents. And Alabama, 16 cents. Now, the nation's top least expensive markets, which I believe this is kind of sad. These are the least expensive. I still think it's expensive. Mississippi, $3.32. Louisiana, $3.43. Alabama, $3.45. Kentucky, $3.46. Ohio, $3.46. Tennessee, $3.48. Texas, $3.49. Arkansas, $3.49. South Carolina, $3.53. And Oklahoma, $3.56. So that's a little bit of... And I feel like this article is just back and forth. You know what I mean? Where it's like, oh, well, it's lower prices and we're seeing a change. But then we talk about how it went up 11 cents.
The other day we were driving and I saw gas and diesel was the same price. And
I saw that too.
I saw diesel cheaper than gas.
I saw that too.
I haven't seen that in forever. Now, was I wise enough to pull over and put fuel in? No. I waited until they jacked it 20 cents a gallon overnight.
Oh, my gosh.
And I thought, oh, I'll get diesel on the way back. Well, when we were coming back, it was super late. And I'm like, ah, I'll get diesel tomorrow. Well, that cost me 20 cents a gallon. Not my brighter moment. But do you ever hear any news from Saudi Arabia?
Mm-mm.
So they essentially have been the trendsetters, if you will, for decades. Back when we were on the oil standard for the U.S. currency, that all oil had to be traded in U.S. dollars. Saudi Arabia, that was our guarantee to them that when we had a strong military, we would protect them. Well, in the latest, how do I put this, administration, that has all changed. And so now they're trading oil and rubles and whatever else that they can come by, probably the yen and maybe the euro, I don't know. Point being is we're not in such simpatico. We're not bros anymore with Saudi Arabia, from what I can see. Now, I am not a global analyst or anything like that, or economist, but that plays a big factor on it, as well as we're not producing as much oil here domestically. And we're selling a fair amount of our oil reserves over to China.
I believe that we had the option to fill mm-hmm. a portion of our petroleum reserve, and yep. we did not.
We did not.
And I believe that was, what, 2 weeks ago now?
Yep. That sounds exactly correct, in my opinion. So, I don't... The other thing is, you know, they have raised, I don't know if you've noticed here in the last couple of years, the E10 or the 10% ethanol portion of the fuel. Most stations, or if not all stations, other than their premium, and they'll list it, you'll have to look for it, are now E15. So they're putting more ethanol in our fuels, which drastically shortens the life of that fuel. The ability for it to evaporate and draw moisture or water out of the air is significantly higher. And so the shelf life of the gasoline is much shorter than it used to. When I was a kid, you could go a year on fuel and it'd still be combustible. I have a little engine drive welder that it's been 3 months and the fuel's already soured in it. It has a horrible smell and I'm having all kinds of carburetor problems with it. Now, for everybody out there judging me, that's fine. Should I have put premium in it? Yes, you're right. But I didn't have any premium sitting around, so I thought I would use it enough, and I didn't. So this is my bad. But my point is, you had better be as proactive as possible. So what did I do? Well, when I saw, and I'm essentially trying to pay attention to Saudi Arabia and our relationship with them to hedge my investment a little bit. So beings I missed the boat the first time when diesel was cheaper than gas, I went ahead and I have a 100-gallon tank. And I filled it up with road diesel, not off-road diesel. And I'm basically betting that diesel is going to go up throughout at least the next month or two. And now I have a fixed cost. I don't know if you ever get into dollar cost averaging, which is where, you know, people buy a little bit of, say, Bitcoin every week, and then it averages out in their investment. I guess that's my thought about the diesel part of it, that I better have a little bit on hand if I need to do a little bit of traveling. I'm not under the gun if diesel for some reason gets to $5 a gallon, which I realize I'm talking about diesel quite a bit now, but gasoline is a relationship to diesel. So that would put diesel, or that would put gas at probably $4.50, maybe $4.30 a gallon. I'm sure we all remember those days when it costs, you know, $30 to drive back and forth to work a day, which is crazy. But that's kind of how I'm hedging my bets a little bit here and keeping a little bit extra diesel on hand. So if we do get a big spike, well, then we get a big spike. And if the bottom falls out of it, which I don't think is going to happen, then, yeah, I at least have some extra fuel that I paid for that I can run and get good use out of. So
good thinking.
That's kind of my take on the whole fuel situation, as well as trying to keep your car in as good a shape as possible. And not, you know, leaving a bunch of crap in there that makes the car weigh more. Make sure the tires are aired up correctly. Just do what you can to maintain your vehicle to get the best economy possible is kind of my take on that. So what do you think, Sarah? You think my tinfoil hat showing that, you know, keeping a little extra fuel around the place is a bad thing?
Well, I mean, we always keep extra fuel around
our
place, too. Yeah.
You about have to. You know, we live out in the rural county, which I very much love. Appreciate
me too.
That.
Me too.
You know, I got different engine power equipment that I need fuels for, whether it is gas or diesel, a little mixture of both. The diesel seems to tolerate or store a little bit longer than the gas. And then I try and just, you know, rotate my stock out. I've always wanted those big farm tanks, you know, that you can have them come out and fill. But, you know, I don't know that I'm quite that serious at this point in time. But one of these days, maybe when I'm old and gray, that's what I'm going to go for. So
switching gears here really quick. Okay. We just got a couple of minutes left. So we got a couple of recall alerts that everybody needs to be aware of. The first one is for the Nissan Leaf, and this is the EV version. So if you're out there and you have one, which I haven't heard too much talk about this one, but 80,000 Nissan Leafs are being recalled over risk of unintended acceleration.
Oh.
That is terrifying.
Yeah.
So Nissan is recalling more than 80,000 Leafs in the U.S. to fix a problem with the vehicle control module software. As reported by Bloomberg News, the problem could cause sudden acceleration after exiting cruise control or could cause the electric motor to stop functioning during driving.
Oh, wow.
Now, this is between the years of 2018 through 2022. So that's
a pretty good amount of vehicles in year span.
So it says the recall affects several Nissan models, but nearly a million total vehicles in countries outside of the U.S., but just in this country, the 2018 through the 2022 model Leaf is just affected. But, I mean, worldwide, a million, that's pretty scary.
Yeah,
so
it is.
If this is you, make sure to get your vehicle in and get that taken care of as soon as possible.
Absolutely.
We also have another recall. It's for Ford. This time it's for the F-150 truck. Have you heard of this one?
No, I don't think so yet.
I feel like we've had a couple of Ford recalls here recently.
Quite a few.
So Ford Motor Company, they're conducting a recall of hundreds of thousands of F-150 trucks in the U.S. that could potentially experiencing a wiring-related problem with their electric parking brakes. In a safety recall report to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, the vehicle company said contact with the rear axle housing may damage a wiring harness, which could lead to unexpected activation of the electric parking brake. So there's 870,701 trucks potentially being affected through 2021 through 2023 model years, and it features a single exhaust system. Production of the recalled vehicles happened over roughly 3 years. People who own the affected F-150 trucks will receive letters informing them of the recall and to fix the issue beginning on September 11th. The same date, dealers will get the notification, according to the report. So that is you out there. Definitely keep an eye out on that as well.
That electric parking brake deal, I just don't quite, they haven't got it revised very well yet.
Have we had recalls over that?
I don't think so. I did work on a Jeep. I think it was like a Patriot or a Compass. It was something of that chassis style. Could have been a Cherokee. But it had water intrusion into the electric parking brake control module, and the brakes were locked up on it. And it took us, I think, about a month to be able to get that module because the water had damaged the internals on it. And we had to put a new pigtail in it and whatnot. It was fairly expensive, but that was all at the customer's expense. It was not a recall. So it's definitely something they're having some issues with. The electric parking brake is nice because it keeps the weight off the parking pole of the transmission, or it helps with it, if you will. So it's one of those things that I see some usefulness of it, but they've been doing cars for years and years and years without it. And, you know, they really haven't got it worked out to where it's a really good, robust system quite yet. I see quite a few problems, and that's indicative of new technology. No matter who makes it out there, it seems like, you know, the first several, you know, generations of it, they're working the bugs out of. And then by usually like the third or fourth generation of whatever it is, you can fill in the blank with whatever you'd like. Then it's like, okay, we got all the problems figured out. And it sounds like they're still in the midst of doing that a little bit. So you got to be careful buying these newer vehicles that the technology hasn't been refined as of yet.
Well, believe it or not, but we are out of show. So if you are out there in radio land, you have a question or comment, feel free to text us on our text line. That phone number is 417-447-5743, or reach out to us on our social media. That is at 1041 KSGF. Dustin, I hope you have a good rest of your weekend.
You as well. Be safe.
Bye.